pass muster through a committee to establish that elsewhere.
Okay. We're going again now.
It's working now?
Yes, it's working now.
And I was, I had a very funny negative, I remember that first time, and his, he reacted very negatively, as though this was terrible, you see, with his own clients, Olson. And only later I began to realize that he wanted to hire. I mean, in this kind of image that he had created of what he wanted, it wasn't really anyone else, it was Olson's image. And
his interview with me in the key garden out there, as we walk around, it was almost exclusively about my experiences as a leader of the Great Books program for many years on the third day of the lab. That's what fascinated me.
Well,
I don't care less what I think about food.
Yeah. Look, could I do this? Could I ask you to turn the page? And let's talk about people who should be interviewed if we are to. Now these are just
what's going to be the purpose of this history, and what's going to be its emphasis?
Is this going to be an oral history?
This is. Let me explain how I got into this thing. About a year ago, I believe there was an interest in doing a history, and you...
Marburg, the one who set up a book committee.
All right. And then somehow I got wind of it, and Neil said that he would like to talk with me about it. And we never got together before he resigned. Then Jerry Schubel wrote me saying that he understood that I was interested and would be willing to be helpful. And so he would like to talk with me. And we talked once about it, and at that time, I got the impression that it was still on. The next time, and I said some ideas and a brief outline of the early period that I was familiar with. And then we talked again, and it was quite clear that it was off. But I had indicated to Jerry who had died and who was ill. For instance, Harry Porter's had a stroke, he's down in Chapel Hill, and that there were people scattered. Sam Boone's down in Sarasota. Out of the blue came really his offer to have me draw on $2,500 for travel and for taping the recollections of people who have been involved with the creation and the development of Stony Brook. And Jerry still feels that what has happened here at Stony Brook is of importance, not only in the state, but nationally. And
no question about it.
That we should try to get these recollections before people pass on.
It will become an archive, an oral history archive?
It'll be there in case somebody later on wants to do the writing. I've got my own work. I'm still working on.
Sure.
And I have offered simply to provide my recollection of the years that I was active one way or another. Now, what I've done here is to come up with a few names you can add others, and probably we should add others. And
if this thing is working, we'll get them.
Johnny Brightell was counsel to Dewey. Larry Welch was assistant counsel. Larry has been president of the New York Bar Association. And Norman Hurd was directing the budget at the time that I came.
Yeah, he had, I'm sure he was in pretty important. So.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how long he had been there. Can you think of anybody else in the governor's office with whom you dealt? Okay, trustees. I've got Martha Downey, Beth Moore, Clifton Phelan. He may very well be dead by now. Donald Blinken.
Well, now, if you got Donald Blinken, that means you're bringing it up.
Yes.
You're intending to bring this up to contemporary times? I mean, well, because Donald Blinken is very recent.
Yeah. Yes.
If you're going to have Donald Blinken, you certainly ought to have Judith Moyers.
Right.
And if you're going to have people that recent among the trustees, then we ought to go back to the governor's office. Include Hank DeLay, for example.
Hank who?
DeLay.
The one from Central must have worked for.
Well, what I'm suggesting here is not time linked, time oriented. Although what I put down here is largely my memory of things. So if you want to go later on.
I guess my question of you is, what are you going to try to encompass? Because we've been talking here about the origins. I mean, this is a Gang of Four that's pretty
right.
qualified to talk about
yes.
earliest origins. If you get and if you take any random faculty member at random that's been here for 10 years, they never heard of John Lee, they don't know anything about it, these right. prior events, anything about it, but they know about other very important things that have
that's
happened
true.
In recent times. Now, I would
well,
say Donald Blinken probably never heard of John Lee.
Let me ask you a question then. If I'm going to do any of the interviewing, it ought to be people that with whom I have had some contact. So, at least I think, maybe you want to take a shot at that statement, but that would limit it to people back in 71.
Well, I think it should be limited. I think that
at this point, but sometimes
$2,500
the same thing.
In terms of the,
is itself a limitation?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you have a limited budget, and I think also the first and most crucial problem, as you cited earlier, is the fact that most important to get the earliest stuff first.
Absolutely.
Because that stuff is going to evaporate and we won't have it.
I mean, that's urgent. I mean, think
the
of
more recent things, you have many more people.
You got Stan Ross that you can
sure.
get.
Yeah,
not anymore.
Think of the
right.
already.
A number of losses.
Ollie Schaefer.
Yeah.
Important
yes.
people there.
Right.
But well, Jim Allen, who was a key figure in that 50s,
he went down
in
an airplane crash.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you've got already.
Allen was a very important.
Yeah, a lot of people you can't even, you know, interview or have anything to do with.
So I think it's urgent to get the early.
Let's look at this list then in terms of the early period. Let's say prior to 70.
Mm-hmm. When did Donald Blinken go on the board?
Gee, he came on, I can almost tell you, he became a member in 1977, I think.
Blinken.
Because, or 76.
Before it was
Jim. Cole threw a party for him. He'd just been named to the board.
Yeah.
And because he was an art collector, Rothko stuff, and we had, and the person who helped him build that collection was in our faculty. In the art department, so Todd went for a long business. What's his name? The critic who invented time pop art. My mind's blank.
He's now out. He had developed a spinal trouble. I remember the minute, but he, so he knew, he was very, very close to Blinken, so he came, and that party was, couldn't be later than this, earlier rather than about 76. So he was a fairly new man.
If you're going to talk about Stony Brook, then I don't know whether you want to go back to Councils for Duty. That's the origin of State University, the origin of Stony Brook.
Well, you have Urich on the list, and Urich worked with Dewey, so you have that, and Harriman, for that matter, too.
But
Stony Brook wasn't even a gleam in the eye.
I don't know whether Urich...
The list is getting smaller as we sit here. You know,
well, I think the faculty staff list is going to have to grow.
Okay.
But I agree with Tom about going as far back as to Council to Dewey.
Well, I think...
For example, we were talking about those early reports, the Stony Brook days. The Blagan report, for example.
I think it's important to get that thinking in there. But you don't need more than a paragraph or two on that, ultimately. The thing is, Stony Brook is here because of decisions over which we had no control initially.
Yeah.
And we've got...
Well, that's absolutely right. It has a long, and its origins go back in New York State politics a long ways, and certainly to the Dewey administration.
And now the central office, for instance.
Is Thomas Hamilton still running a travel agency in Honolulu?
Of course I know.
Is he running a travel agency?
Well, yeah, when he, sure, after he left the...
he left the presidency.
University of Hawaii, he took over the biggest, the largest travel agency in Honolulu.
Is it?
As far as I know, he's still living.
Yeah.
He found his métier.
I didn't know. What was the no baseball league?
I was told that Larry Murray had no use for John Toole.
Larry Murray, if you get him to talk, I really tell you what went on.
Larry Murray,
he's the hatchet man.
That's how right. He's in retirement, I assume. How's the state of his health? Do you know anything about that?
No comment. I got his name and the fact that he was in Schenectady from Martha Downey.
Because he knows a lot. I mean,
oh, God.
If you get all that, Tom said, open him up and you got the whole...
You get the prologue.
Foster was there.
Charlie
Foster, yeah.
Was there from 48. I didn't realize that.
Where's the first head of the research foundation? What was his name?
Mort Brand.
He's still there.
He's still in the research foundation.
Yeah. Really?
He's not very visible, but he's there.
Yeah, he remembers a lot of things. He and John were...
Yeah.
John was as close to Mort Brand in Albany as anybody, I think.
John Lee.
Yeah.
Ellen Stevens is
still there. They had a personal... They had something personal in common. They both had French wives.
Oh, I see.
What's Lee doing?
He's in California, not in Washington.
He's in California now?
Yeah.
He's not in Washington.
No.
Do you know what? Do you have his address? Or?
Somewhere. Yeah, I got a letter from about a year ago. And a phone call.
What did you get?
I had regards from him delivered to me by Dick Lee.
Dick Lee's letter. Yeah,
Dick Lee sees him. Dick Lee will tell you how to...
I gave the address to Dick Lee in the telephone number, and then Dick called him when he was out in California and went to visit him.
Well, Dick Lee brought regards to me from John Lee.
Oh. Dick Lee, now, I don't seem to recall him.
He's in mechanical engineering.
I see. We ought to add him to the list.
Yeah. It's on a two-yearly draft.
If you get to someone like Gould is a mine of information because he was so close to Rockefeller. Rockefeller handpicked him.
Yeah.
And because he had been the chairman, Gould was chairman of this Rockefeller commission that Rockefeller had set up on the arts. And the Sam Gould I had heard from another source was Gould in mind the moment he took over that chairmanship that to take on a bigger position state. That, you know, Rockefeller was always his talent hunter.
make it, but Gould would be able to give you a lot of information that even though...
He certainly would, and Ernie Boyer was his right-hand man.
Exactly. And
Ernie Boyer certainly knows a lot.
So between the two of them, they can fill you in about the past. So you can use some of these people to ask them who in Albany were key people in getting the thing going, because you will find, I'm sure, that will give you insight into this whole business.
Elwin Stevens, when I first knew him, was not Central Office at all. He was Department of Public Works. It was before there was a State University Construction Fund. Buildings were built by the DPW, and he was their hard-nosed representative. He gave us a very hard time on this.
Our engineering building is built by DPW.
That's
what Stan Ross
knows. Because
he got a big bathroom, and
the whole first round of red brick buildings was
built by Stan.
Then he moved over to State.
Yeah, Stan always hated my bathroom.
He went over to SUCF.
Furious.
He went to the State University Construction Fund.
Yeah.
After his run, but never in very high office, as far as I know. I don't think Elwin Stevens was ever a policymaker. He was a nuts.
From Tull's point of view, he was an obstruction.
He was an obstruction. He was a nuts and
bolts
obstructionist. he was an obstructionist as far as I was concerned.
Oh, too. Boy.
He really...
Yeah, that's right. I worked with him on the engineering building.
We had an architectural firm called Voorhees, Walker, Smith, Smith and Haynes.
Haynes, right.
And they had a marvelous guy working on the then new chemistry building, which is now the old chemistry building. And he finally blew his stack, and he went to Elwin Stevens and said, "You got to decide who's designing this building. Is it you or Dr. Bonner?" And there was... "Who gives me my orders?" Because he would come and talk with me and we'd make all kinds of arrangements. He'd go to Stevens and he'd X them all out. It was a really ridiculous situation.
George Dudley was one of the three people at the construction firm. He was an architect from Rensselaer in the park. He's still alive.
Why are you leaving out Oscar Lamford?
Oh, he's much later.
Oscar
Lanford was president of Fredonia.
Fredonia, yeah.
Remember?
Lanford tried to become president.
He came here for president. That's right. You want to become president.
Well, that was...
Never forgave us.
I think that was Harry's idea.
Damn well it was Harry's idea.
Yeah, sure. But in a way, Lanford never...
He never liked the
campus and what the faculty did to him. So I got...
Well, who was the original leader of SUCF?
Dudley. He was a close friend of Rottenberg's. I remember one meeting they had down here, the only time that I ever met him. And he was going to put the president's house right on the campus. And I blew my stack. Must not have the president's house on the campus. He's got to have some kind of chance to get away. And obviously in the middle of the situation
But you know who contrived the whole bonding program, the whole concept, was John Mitchell. I mean, Mitchell was the brains behind the whole creation of the whole construction fund concept and how they were going to fund it. And
our John Mitchell?
Yes, our one and only. And
what do you mean, John Mitchell?
The one that
John
hangs,
Mitchell who became...
The one who hangs and twirls in the wind?
Yes, the one who became...
That one?
Yes.
Attorney General?
What did he have to do with this?
He was a big New
York lawyer. He dreamt up the whole mechanism for Rockefeller, how to fund the building of State University.
Is he living?
Sure.
Yeah.
He got out of jail, didn't he?
Jail, or maybe he's still in jail. I tell you, funny, in the time of the Cambodian crisis, when the campuses were really heated up, we felt very concerned that something had to be done, and Alec was acting president, and the two of us joined with a group of presidents and academic vice presidents of the other university centers, and we tried to get appointment to see the president. We thought that someone in Buffalo had possibly the opportunity to see Nixon or something. We didn't, but the White House said, "We've arranged for you to see John Mitchell," and so he went to Mitchell's office. Justice Department. And I've never seen a more nervous man in my life. He had come in, and his hands really were trembling. He was trying to light a cigarette. And when we came, he tried to be very joking. He said, "Well, I greet you people from State University of New York. Do you know the history?" says of my involvement. He said, I helped make possible State University. Try to ingratiate yourself with me. And we had heard some of the history. And he stopped talking about what he did. Rockefeller was desperate to build, to get thing physically built. He didn't want to go the way of the troubles that they ran to places like City University, other municipal places. And he dreamt up this whole idea of the bonding approach through the use of tuition monies and so on. And he said, well, and then we started talking, and little did we realize, only years later, that we realized our telling them all the troubles was fueling all of their paranoia, and that, you know, the America was about to blow up, you see, because we were saying, you've got to do something about the war, because when the campuses are in real trouble, and we're representing only one part of a larger picture in this country.
Was this before Kent State?
I think Kent State had already happened. No, Kent State had, but this was...
Cambodia.
This was post...
Post-Cambodia.
Post-Cambodia.
But we were out of Vietnam.
No, we didn't get out of Vietnam until Gerald Ford.
Oh, those are crazy days. Anyway, so there's John Mitchell you can talk to. You can go to jail and speak to him. Give him a tape recording.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking who else on Central Office.
Milton Harris.
I dealt with Gordon, Herb Gordon, on the purchase of land. Yep. He was land acquisition at the time.
Yeah, he's good. He knows a lot. He's a good person.
He's around a lot.
There was a guy, not Milton Harris, but there's a guy that I dealt with in equipment purchasing and that kind of thing in the Central Office. Remember? Harris?
Well, the man I was thinking about in the art department is Alloway. Okay.
Okay.
It was Alloway.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one who was very close to Blinken.
Does anyone Lawrence this Alloway. Group know why the decision was made or how it was made to come to Stony Brook as opposed to some other place and how this was tied in with the gifts?
I should think that they would know that we ought to be, probably Martha or Martha Downey would know this.
Probably Larry Murray could answer all this.
Yeah, Larry Murray was involved in the negotiations.
Yeah.
You, maybe you should interview Dorothy Melville, you know? Is there too late?
Not too late. Not yet.
She should be a valuable resource.
She's very good about it all.
I know, but she should be interviewed.
Yeah.
Because it's important, I think that's an important part of it. That
yeah, no, she,
what
she
what Melville's expectations were. I know that she freely says that he died unhappy.
Oh yeah?
Worst thing he ever did was bring the university back.
Well, you say, maybe she said that, but that's not what I got from him toward the end of his life.
Yeah.
And he realized what kind of an institution it had become.
Well, I always had the feeling.
What did he say?
He had a much broader view than she did. He had a statewide view, at least, not simply a Long Island view, or a local. And I think he could appreciate what Stony Brook had become. And different from what he wanted. He didn't like the architecture.
Didn't like
the
He wasn't alone.
He wasn't alone in that. I didn't like the early architecture.
No, a lot of company.
No, but he thought in large terms. And I think you came to understand what the university was becoming.
Natalie Feast, when she got her first look of the new old now the old chemistry building, she said, aha, early American urinal. Something that's like white tile corridors.
And right book. Departments that had the least need for the large library, closest to the library. Humanities stuck off a ways. And now you have the humanities in six different locations on campus. But they're the stepchildren of the university.
Well, that's a piece of history that yeah. goes back, goes to the Toll, to the Toll Pond regime, when they were putting space in the bank and spending it on, I mean, they were yeah. getting their projections in order to qualify for space, which they were then using and essentially shortchanging the humanities. With the expectation that they would make up for it later, which they were never able to do. Isn't that right, Sidney?
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, we almost endangered the fine arts, too. I mean, we had a really difficult problem there. Because in a way, I think Johnny's appetites were insatiable at the point where he just felt he didn't have enough space, even with the space going up. Well, finally he got the humanities thing on, you know, at least on the basis of a planning level, but it never, of course.
There was going to be a humanities tower?
Tower, yeah. But it was a multi-purpose structure. You're going to have a lot of things in it. You're going to have spillovers from the arts. You're going to have a faculty club there. They're going to have the beginnings of a kind of conference. Everything. It was an omnibus type thing. It would also contain humanities.
That's been scrapped.
Well,
essentially.
See, we could have gotten a separate humanities. The big decision was made at a point because of Johnny's desire for bigness also came with the library. And he insisted on having a library of a size that they would not approve. Okay. And it kept going back and forth. It was bloody. And he kept suggesting all kinds of things about the graduate enrollments, and everyone knew those graduate enrollments were not only unrealistic. I mean, we'd go into the 21st century, we would have. Well into the 21st century. Any rate, as a compromise, you see, he said, okay, but build this building, but we will house, you see, other facilities, or other groups in that facility, mainly humanities. And they brought in foreign languages, they dragged a lot of people in. Presumably, that would be their house, but
that's become their faith.
Of course, and part of the problem was that he traded that off in terms of a future humanities facility per se.
Yeah.
And their argument is when you can fill the agreement or expectation was when you can really fill that library comfortably in terms of the overall campus needs and population, then we'll talk about building another facility. Mm. That was the problem. That's where the trade-off.
There's a man named Mort Gassman.
Mort Gassman, very important.
Which I think you should put down.
Yeah. Yeah. What spell his name? G-A-S-T-M-A-N.
No, G-A-S-S.
G-A-S-S-M-A-N.
Yeah.
He knows all about that space
everything.
Business.
Yeah.
And he screwed the sciences eventually because when we finally did have these big buildings under architectural design, he personally went through all those plans and removed all the lecture halls.
That's right.
And pronounced that there was going to be a separate science lecture hall facility.
Right.
And that's why we have no lecture hall facilities in any of the big science buildings, physics, chemistry, life science.
I thought that was a holdover from the idea that we were going to teach in small classes.
No.
There was going to be justice done to the sciences. Right. We were going to have big demonstration facilities.
Right.
The whole bit. The location was even determined. I can show you where it was going to be.
No, Fred is right. He just
systematically eliminated all lecture hall spaces from those buildings.
Well, this is part of a chapter on the war back and forth between
Albany
and
that very
and
good
Stony Brook
for the self-study members in London. I was reading the thing that you wrote.
My self-study piece?
Yeah. The whole relations with Albany. I mean, that's a critical
part. Carl must be familiar with that.
Yeah.
I see a period, initial period, where all of the initiatives came from Albany. Transition period when the local campus was making suggestions, some of which were accepted. And then a period when most of the initiative came from here. And so much of it came from here that the central office began to dig in and drag its feet and appeal to relativism.